Yeah, we have only towers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so cooling towers do, if it's direct contact, it uses a lot of water. Like a 10 megawatt, cooling tower that would support a 10 megawatt facility. The evaporation rate is about 326 gallons per minute. Blowdown is another 250, so it's 550 to 600 gallons a minute just to keep that thing running. It's significant.
Can they get enough water from the municipal wastewater treatment plant to?
It's 3 million gallons a day.
3 million gallons a day?
And what goes through, how much goes through the treatment plant? Oh, it's 3 million?
I think 3 million, is it 3 million the average daily excluding stormwater?
And how much is 500 gallons?
I don't think that's the average.
What is it?
Think 3 million?
500 times.
Five.
60.
How do they, why?
Sounds like
they'd be draining lakes around here.
I said use saltwater.
Well, the big ones are almost always on freshwater rivers.
Yeah, that's 720,000 gallons a day.
So it doesn't take a.
But they could handle it with the wastewater.
I think it was a little bit more, we clarified that.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's just a cooling tower. If it has a boiler, heat recovery system, that, again, it's not much, it's another 100,000 gallons a day. So again, if we can have a combined heat and power system where the process, the heating load is taking that heat and then returning it back at a lower temperature, we don't have that need for that heat rejection. And the generator itself could use a fin fan radiator type cooler, you could eliminate that large use from the cooling tower. Or again, if you just put a 5 million gallon limit on it, that would prevent a larger power plant for sure. Because at that point, you're going to need a cooling tower for some heat rejection.
Well, we said, last week, you said 80% of the unprocessed water would be recycled.
Correct, yes.
So they would only be bringing in 20% of the water would be new or fresh in that scenario. Would that put a limit on the size? You know, can they recycle 80% in a larger facility?
You know, in the boiler application, absolutely. It's tougher to do with, again, with the open, direct contact open cooling tower because of the evaporation.
Right, okay.
I mean, you could put mist eliminators, try to recapture some of that water, but there's still going to be quite a bit of loss.
So you're saying put a limit of 2 million?
I mean, that would limit it to, 2 million would be a 25 mega. Again, I'd have to validate these numbers, but I just did some rough numbers today, and that's roughly a 20 to 25 megawatt plant.
Assuming it's using an open, it's 25 megawatt, assuming it's using an open tower, and it's not combined heat and power. If that heat is being distributed to another user, you don't have that loss, potentially.
Right.
Assuming it's being.
Not as significant, yeah.
So where does this go?
So is that going to be an alternative?
Yeah.
Recycle at least 80% or consume no more than 2 million gallons of unprocessed water per day?
Yeah, we have that 80% we'd say last.
And then that was a limit that would prevent more of the that's what I was looking at.
Right.
The way I read it, yeah.
But I was just, I think I'm just wondering if the 80%, does that would be a limitation in itself, or would that be enough, or should we have that kind of a.
It would be, it could be if it was a smaller facility that still had, for whatever reason, needed a open direct contact cooling tower.
Where are you?
Page seven.
I'm on page two.
I don't know, why, what are you doing there?
That's right. That's where everybody else is. What are you?
We're talking about cooling towers.
I don't think, yeah, number three, clean process water.
All right, well, I'm looking at this thing you said.
That's tied together.
Yeah, but they're two different places.
Yeah, but they're tied together.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what Eric's doing, he's just intentionally trying to confuse you.
He's doing a good job, because I can't find any 80%.
So is it the larger ones that can do a closed system, or is it the smaller ones?
Smaller.
Smaller. So there's no question, the larger one's gonna be an open cooler tower.
Most likely. Especially if there's a chilled water component, on top of a district heating system, if some type of district cooling, or even if it's a, the building right beside it, you know, if you have some type of absorption chiller, you would need a pretty good-sized cooling tower.
What about if you're using centrifugal chiller as opposed to an absorption chiller?
It'll need the cooling tower.
Yeah.
It'll need a place to reject the heat that you're removing with the chiller.
Who would sell on this? Why would it remove it now?
So are we looking for the whole, I'm looking to finish the zoning conversation here. Utilize to cool 2 million, is that where that would go?
He, I think Dan said he was going to double check on that.
But that's where you're looking at the 2 million, correct? That's where the number would go?
Yeah.
Where? Seven?
It's over at seven.
And it's 2 million gallons per?
Day.
Per day.
Per day. And wasn't there somewhere in here where they had to?
No, it isn't.
Where I'm gonna deplete the, they were dropping water supply.
But there should be a standard in there, I think, somewhere about.
It's in here.
Making demonstration that the water distribution system can maintain pressure, else put in an onsite storage facility, thank you, if they can.
Can we answer first on page two? Number three. Line number three, under number three, is it the 2 million? Is that the unit that goes in there?
I didn't look at this one today. Cool. Or more. So that was the limit in any power generation, the open process, right?
You can't cool more than 2 million gallons.
That's, no, I think that was the use. The 2 million was the actual use.
Oh, not more, right, not more than 2 million.
Are we even, you know, on the right track in terms of that being a mechanism for limiting?
Yeah.
The size of open cooling towers.
My reading of this language is that it doesn't limit, right, it only imposes the condition of the best possible control technologies.
Right. Yeah, that's the way I read it.
Yeah, so it reduces it, it doesn't eliminate it, or limit it to a specific amount.
Yeah, I think the reason for this, and I'm reading it now again.
Yeah.
This was actually, let me just double check one more time.
This is less about quantity than it is the impacts. Condensation and precipitation.
So it doesn't end up with the fog and the rest of it.
I mean, wouldn't we want everybody to use best available control technologies, or is that not realistic?
Yeah, you would.
So.
We talked a little bit about drift eliminators last time we were together.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a fair amount of poking around, and there's not a lot in terms of ordinances to compare to when you're talking about cooling towers. At least not that I could find. But there are some criteria that define, because we talked about a device called a drift eliminator.
Mm-hmm.
There are some criteria that I did find that seem fairly practical and achievable that limits the amount of water that leaves the top of the tower in liquid form, drips and so forth. And it's based on the type of tower, either a counterflow or a crossflow. A counterflow is limited at 0.002% of the recirculated water volume. And for a crossflow tower, that's 0.005%, so a little bit higher in a crossflow tower. And just for.
So
So that's a percentage of the water they're cooling?
Yes.
Yep.
And I brought, I did bring a few copies of something that the Environmental Protection Agency puts out on, to try off the internet, that I don't have enough copies for everyone. I started with this one ordinance here and realized that I was going to be hard on trees, so I figured I would offer to send a copy to anyone who'd like one. But that's basically, that document just explains the different types of cooling towers, what they do, how they work. So some light reading.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about you, but with these hyperbolic cooling towers, to me,
but I'm stressed out.
They work great, but you know, it's bad look for offices.
The PR might be a problem.
You only see those at a really large facility.
Oh, okay.
In the industrial park.
But I mean, is it unreasonable to require best available technologies for any cooling tower? That seems reasonable.
Yep.
Right, so we can eliminate that.
What are we eliminating?
Well, the notion that best available control technologies would be used only at a certain amount of cooling capacity or more.
Right.
Yeah.
If you eliminate that, they're all pretty much open for review, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we could add the categorical limitations as well that Mike provided.
And I'll share. This is one of the ordinance examples. It's from Florida, Broward County, that specifically lists those criteria.
There you go, Kevin.
Excellent.
That's what he wants.
This pretty good at a time also.
It's based on a percentage of the flow of the water, so it's tied to how much water is flowing through the cooling tower.
Okay, so which is per day or anything?
No.
Okay. Carol, I don't even know that plastic hyperbolic cooling towers. Geez, high limit 65 feet, Kevin?
75, 45.
It would be taller than that.
Yeah, you would go on. 75 foot high limit anyway, unless there's some other excluding.
200 feet at the
shore. Oh, fine. Maybe we should encourage violations. You know, the fines look pretty good.
We're not very heavy handed on the fine front here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, thanks, Wayne. I just looked at it online. That's a pretty good high level EPA publication in terms of.
So, okay, do we want to establish a limit in terms of setback for cooling towers?
From residential zones.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you were bringing up last time that these box could be 150 feet or more.
Again, that's on a pretty large facility. Mm-hmm. We're talking 20, well, even 25 megawatts, it could be significant, but I don't know how far it would actually drift on a cold day. I did look at the ordinances from Biddeford, Westbrook, and VA, and they didn't differentiate whether it's a power generation facility, it's just in general, any of those nuisance things. And one of them had 30 feet, the other two had 50 feet as far as setbacks.
We got 75 anyways.
Yeah.
So we may not need an additional
ordinance.
We may not need that then.
Right.
But that's from property in a residential zone. Some of the drawbacks of this drift is roads that go by.
Right.
All right. So maybe change the focus to 50 feet from a right of way or public property.
50 feet. I mean, you could include the 75 foot there just to make it obvious.
I wouldn't, okay. Because if it changes at any time, they'll conflict.
Okay.
I think we ought to I've never been clear what happens over a town line.
Walmart's having a mess.
You know, I mean, it's kind of like...
Yeah, the city hires water and curry and you sue Walmart.
Well, but my point is...
You probably should have hired an engineer at that time to protect the city's interests.
I'd like it to be clear. Well, I don't know if it's called a residential zone over across the Nile's Head. My point, you know, so... It must be, but...
They should put up their own wall.
Okay. I'm just not clear how that works across the line, you know? Because let's say that you've got a setback from a residential property. They might not have any setback from, you know...
Yeah, but that's 75 feet. For the residential property, it's 75.
Well, it's a rock.
Whether it's rock or...
It's from the property line, yeah.
And would...
There's a sore point with us, but since that property was... Rockland tried to get that to be an extension of the industrial park. Yeah.
Just to follow up on the way. Three points back. Kevin asked a question about refocus this on a public way. Would it also be a question, Dan or Mike, in terms of drift to an adjacent industrial site, in terms of their parking lots or...
Yeah, air intakes and...
Air intakes.
As I was reading this, it was, you know, it's obviously worded specifically adjacent to a residential zone.
Right.
Does it even need to include that? Can it just end at the boundary line of any property? And just, that covers whatever zone is adjacent.
Doesn't cover the right of way.
Well, then you just say, what, 50 feet from the boundary?
Yeah, if it says the boundary, it's going to cover the right of way.
Yep.
It'll cover anything.
And adjacent facilities, and even easier.
Okay.
If you're Fisher, you don't want to be drawing that water into the air intake for your painting
booth, right?
Yeah.
That's be a real problem.
That could be an issue.
I think for some things like noise, the industrial versus residential distinction may be relevant. In other cases, if you've got especially manufacturing process, it's a highly specialized process, it may be more of a concern for them than it would be for a residential property.
Okay.
Okay, so where are we now?
So on fugitive emissions, is there somewhere a set of standards that we can point to these maximum fugitive emission limitations and so on?
I wasn't able to find anything specific on fugitive emissions, just on NFPA, ANSI, National Gas Code, American Gas Association. There's all kinds of codes of how gas lines, fuel lines should be constructed as well as maintained. You know, and the intent is, you know, other than some type of purge or venting of the system for the operation of it, I mean, the intent is, you know, no leaks, right? So it all, a lot of it goes on the operations and maintenance side. So again, asking them to submit some type of maintenance plan, maintenance schedule, inspection, asking for third-party inspections. Again, their insurance company is going to be involved as well, right? So,
I think for Dan, I think you raised this question before. The relevant question really would be to be sure the city is citing the right codes.
Right. Yeah, and I have a list of those. I'll email you those. I did pull, and like I said, there's a whole list of them. The other thing I did pick up on, and this was in the American Gas Association, states, municipalities require carbon monoxide monitoring too, or some type of monitoring on those gas lines. So you can have, you require them to put some type of gas monitoring on the regulating station feeding the facility.
Right. Yeah, if you can get us the citation, but yeah. Kevin, you've already got a note in here. And I suspect, certainly for whatever the hell happened in Oregon, I think it's going to be under 0.4 here.
Yeah.
99% of the time, it's going to blow up because somebody didn't maintain it.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of those gas lines could be very old, you know, at this point.
I think we need to, where the, in chapter four, consider establishing, we do need to establish an annual inspection program requiring operators submit and schedule for a not good scale for any power production. Not solar, I guess. Doesn't, but the grid scale, I don't, how do you make the distinction? Because the solar's not gonna have an annual maintenance.
Most, some of them do, but they'll go through, and they'll go with the, through with the thermal imaging camera, looking at all the wiring connections to make sure there's no hot spots. They'll look at the inverters, again, the internal components, so they should be doing that themselves anyway.
So, that we should change that from the grid scale to whatever the language, whatever we call this thing?
Distributed generation.
Do you agree that where she can get on is chapter four?
I think they should have to, shouldn't they have to submit it as a part of the...
Yeah, now that we're gonna require, because we didn't before, but now we're gonna require a review of any power generation facility, and not just big ones, by the planning board. So it could be part of that process.
And they should submit the maintenance plan as a part of it, and
yes,
the demonstration that they actually are...
If they come with the application.
Nope, not part of that. Not part of that.
John?
Groovy.
We brought that up specifically for you.
What, are we on page five now?
So that you would know...
I wrote this two, so...
Just on two? Okay, what are you...
Just above others.
What number are you?
He's going to...
Right, a fugitive, we're talking about fugitive emissions, which is point four, area four on page two. And right above others is in chapter two, annual inspection program, blah, blah, blah. This is somewhere all the time after John left.
You could require him to do a leak test or a pressure test annually as well. I mean, they have to do that when they first put it in, before they'll get the state to sign off on it, or the utility to sign off on it, but you could require him to do that.
Before certificate?
Yeah.
On an annual basis or something?
Yeah, it'll be done when it's first installed regardless. You could ask him to do it on an annual basis.
Part of the maintenance.
Right.
And that won't go in court, what's going on this period?
We'll sort it out.
So can we go to page five now?
This pressure test, is that something that John can do, or is that something that we need to require them to have a...
Typically require them to do.
Require them to.
Do it all and just report the findings.
That doesn't need any more.
Now, John, we originally brought that up just so that it would all be laid out very clearly what's expected, and that they're required to report to you. And you know whether or not you get it. Not that you have to go and...
Remember when we had a city engineer?
And we had those maintenance schedules that would come through, but that was the thinking.
When did we have a city engineer?
Oh, yeah.
A while ago.
David Chittum.
David, you haven't been around for a while, have you?
No, we've been here for years.
Wow, you've got all of history you've gotta learn.
Yeah.
Dave's probably got 10 years at this point.
We're gonna have to test next week.
I think I'm not part of the planning board.
Aren't you glad you came along?
Before we move, and I'm not trying to...
Go back to number page.
Back, I'm not trying to back us up, but I think it's worth a little bit of discussion. The Broward County document speaks to the water chemistry of the cooling tower. So we've been worried about drift and water vapor and so forth. Cooling towers do two things real effectively. They remove heat from the water, but they also do a fantastic job of cleaning the air. And they clean the air of pollen, dust, dirt, and that collects in the water and ends up in the base called the sump of the cooling tower, and is a perfect temperature to grow all sorts of things that can be very unhealthy to human beings. And the Broward County had a requirement, I think it was for 8 times a year, that there had to be testing and results and reporting that they're maintaining the tower properly. And I think, in my mind, the vapor and the water carryover is important, but the health effects, the potential downside health effects, I think, are even more important if we don't do that right. So.
I think it's point well made.
Absolutely. That's not even what I even thought of.
I made it new.
We don't want anything nasty growing.
It's not like Davis, though, is it?
Yes, I think it is.
What would you call it? I mean, it isn't.
It says requirements to obtain application is operated with connectivity that achieves a minimum of 8 cycles of concentration. That's not it.
Yeah, that is it.
Is it? Achieves a minimum of 8 cycles?
Four.
Is equipped with efficient drip eliminators to achieve drip reduction to a maximum of, and towers. So that's it.
Disinfection.
It's under C. It's down under C, D. Requirements to obtain a cooling tower license. Application for a cooling tower license shall be on the form supplied by the division. Shall include documentation demonstrating that the new or replacement cooling tower.
Okay, we're saying achieves a minimum of 8 cycles of concentration.
Okay.
I don't think that's it.
No.
All right, we'll sort it.
You'll find it, but you know what you're looking
maybe
for.
It's in a different part of the ordinance.
Yeah, let me get some verbiage.
Do you have our email?
I have Larry's.
I'll email both.
Okay, that was easy.
Maybe we could, you know, grow something beneficial in there.
Carol's always looking at me.
Well, I was thinking it sounds like a hot tub to me.
All right, are we moving on to page 5?
It's going to be survival of the fittest, that's all.
It was nothing on 3.
Okay.
We're on to 5.
5.
What's the next red?
Oh, yeah, now we.
This is the thing that baffles me the most as far as controlling.
And, oh boy, is there all kinds of information.
Aren't we excited?
I actually stumbled across, just with a very simple Google search, this 200 and something page document.
Wow.
That I didn't read all of it. Has a very good description of, you know, how to handle that, what noise items to consider, and I think it, and I can, and again, I can forward all of this. This is a fairly large file.
Government job.
I paid that for last time.
This is like a 5 meg file in of itself, so I can either email this or we have a way to move big files like this around, so you can, okay. And so anyone who's looking for an exhaustive explanation of all the things to consider, I mean, it goes into cars, dogs barking, people talking, and you know, just on and on.
He didn't
It does have, in the appendix, a summary, and again, I've only got 3 copies, back to the tree thing. It has a summary that has various cities within the U.S., and it speaks to how their ordinances are set up based on the time of day. And then it goes on to reference how various municipalities handle most are doing it by a decibel dBA level, both day and night, similar to how you folks have yours handled. But I guess I would note that it looks like most of these are below your 85 dB level.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
And New Jersey, and I have Boston in a different publication. New Jersey and Boston both have, remember that handout I had last time?
Yeah.
This is the data that's based on the frequency spectrum, and so.
Yeah, okay, what page is that?
A6.
A6, yeah.
Frequency spectrum.
You said 86?
A6.
A6.
Appendix A6.
Oh, A6.
Well, I'll tell you, I was down in the shipyard, and they were jackhammering on the side of a,
yeah,
hull of a barge, a steel,
right,
barge.
Yeah.
And I was just barely getting 85 decibels. And it's like, whoa, man.
So are you by the first two?
There, there, it really is.
Ours are too permissive.
So.
Yeah, I've seen 70 to 75.
70 to 75?
From,
yeah,
during your day. The 60 is the consistent one at night.
So.
But we don't want to see the shipyard shut down either.
Of course, you're right next to it. It's the property line where you measure it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if that's what it is at the property line.
Yeah, it's really loud.
Had to get all the neighbors' muffs put on, you know?
As long as nobody talks, then it won't go up.
But is that considered a construction activity? Because some towns have a separate level for construction activity for a certain period of time.
Daily.
It's a day.
Daily.
What they do.
Imagine the guy doing it.
Shipyard, yeah. And believe it or not, I don't get any complaints.
Really?
It's pretty good. I mean, I hear from my house, some Saturday morning, I just die at 6 o'clock.
What do you look?
Your taxes are low. Point that out.
I've only lived here for 3 years, but I figured that out.
That's what it costs. It's right at 70.
Yeah. All the benefits of living in Rockland, but without paying the taxes.
All right, so we're going to stick with the decibels? Is that where we...
Well, a couple of things to consider.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought...
My finishes and houses.
So, most codes are based on one of two ways. Either you set an absolute noise limit, which is you say no higher than 70 dBA, period, or a spectrum analysis that generates at that level, or you say a relative noise limit, such as no higher than 5 dBA above level, 10 dBA above level, the existing ambient noise level. So there's a couple of ways to kind of go about doing this. Setting an absolute, I think, is probably a little clearer, because the relative is going to require that you do an extended period of probably several days of sound measurements. And then looking at those measurements, then you can determine from them what your ambient sound levels are. Whereas an absolute says, this is it, any point in time you can't exceed this level. The drawback to the, probably the biggest drawback to the absolute is that if you set it at a level that is below where current users are, you could have some folks that are existing in non-compliance with that new ordinance. So that's something just to kind of weigh and consider as we start, you know, talking more about the numbers. As far as the spectrum analysis, as I said, the New Jersey and the Boston that I just shared around.
And that's out of that.
This is out of the city of Boston.
Oh, okay.
Right off their website. Those, they both have a frequency spectrum, and it gives, at the very bottom, it gives the average dBA level. Above that, it gives the sound level in each of the octave bands. So it really helps to define the tonal properties, is what that's called, the tonal properties of the sound.
And John, this was the point I was trying to make when you and I were talking. It's And this was a point that Magnus was making, it's not just...
You can get a high screech.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you look at the, if you look at the numbers on here, the frequencies are the very left column, and the lower the number, the lower the frequency. So as you get up to the 8,000 very high frequencies, the permissible sound level is 38, as compared to down at the very low end at 31.5, your permissible level is 76. So that means that you can have a lot louder low frequency noise than you can a high frequency noise.
But I want to ask John a question, because it's only poor John who has to enforce all this.
I think you have to hire a sound expert to determine.
Yeah, if you get into the frequency bands, you're going to need a sound meter that has the ability to measure each one of those frequencies.
It sounds expensive. Is it?
They're a couple thousand dollars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I'll write an iPhone app.
A what?
I'll write an iPhone app.
Yeah.
You can do this stuff like the iPhone.
That's true. So the iPhone, the apps that you can put on your smartphone will measure the average, so the cumulative dBA, the 60, 70... 80, whatever, is measured by that app. Probably not something that you would want to enforce with, but, is certainly get you in the ballpark.
Yeah. So you know if you have a problem there,
right?
Then you need to go further study to
better analyze it.
These are the noise, this is the performance standard for noise, correct?
Yes.
For everybody.
Well,
yes.
That's what we were talking
that's
about.
What, so yeah. We want to make sure it's enforceable.
Well, that's it.
On a daily basis.
Yes.
Are any of these hertz below or above what humans can hear?
These are all in the audible range. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are all audible.
It sounds like that's the Cadillac version, and Rockland is usually not Ford.
So
you're talking about Model A.
Wow.
The other way to handle the frequencies and the balance across all the frequencies is you can put language in that limits the amount of difference between frequencies. In particular, I won't read what the Maine site location law has to say, but it's quite technical. The Mass DEP has a much simpler version, which basically says that the tonal noise condition, I'll read it, the total noise condition when any octave band sound pressure level, I can't even read it, exceeds the two adjacent octave band sound pressure levels by 3 dB or more. So if the difference between the octave band higher and lower, either of those is greater than 3 dB, then you're in violation of the ordinance.
Are these of interest to wind turbines and stuff like that? I mean, does any of this apply? Isn't there some sort of whoosh? Isn't there some sort of pressure that people feel and I don't know if it has something to do with frequency or not. But.
Yeah, there are a lot of things going on in a wind tower, windmill, that may be a little different than a machine that's running at a constant speed, which would be the case in power generation for the most part. You know, the cooling tower fans, the machine itself would be started and would operate, mostly continuously. So that sound level would be very continuous, whereas with a windmill and the blade sweeping around, you're going to get a variation as the blade, comes closer to you and then goes further away from you. So,
or particularly when the blade crosses stand, that sort of creates the break in the sound.
Oh, I see.
When what? I'm sorry.
When the blade crosses the stand, the turbine's on.
Oh, okay, yeah, right.
So is it one of the mechanical things easier to get used to? I mean, since it runs pretty much the same all the time?
than something that would be...
Yeah, so long as it is, you know, in, I think, on a balance...
Mike, I think you're being too loud.
Average, the final dB period.
That's in the Thanius, and then that's the peak up there, right?
Yep, and that's just measuring dBA.
Right.
Which you might be able to get a filter that would break this down into these octave bands and add that to this meter.
Oh, it could be a practical solution here.
Wait, but these are not, a lot of people use those.
So it's achievable. So what are the board's directions?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should be looking at that that chart that was pointed out, the inclusion of the frequency levels.
Does this chart correspond to any of the NC levels?
Yeah. There is a correlation, but it's probably better to just kind of back away from that. I did ask an acoustic consultant that we use frequently. And they said they've seen the NC used, but it's relatively infrequent. So that would be even probably a larger anomaly than breaking down.
Sure. So it's not necessarily as easy as just saying NC.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
John, do you think that would be easy to enforce if we adopted a
table like that chart? Did you see the chart?
Yeah, you're talking about this one.
Yeah.
I would just want to make sure. I think it's helpful to get more factors involved, but I want to make sure it's clear.
Yes. Similar. Yeah. Similar.
It's certainly a lot stricter in some ways, in that it's taking all facets of noise.
Well, it's more precise, for sure.
It's more sophisticated, too.
I just wondered. I will say that I've only had one complaint that I'm aware of that was the high screeching.
Oh, you have mine, too, remember? With FMC.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's low.
That too.
This was, they thought it was Fisher's, but then Fisher's was closed when they...
Oh, really?
...the entire time, so... Yeah.
How are we going to demonstrate this?
Yeah.
I mean, people ask, well, you know, what's this mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. You know, what level is this?
And how do I adjust it?
How does it compare to our existing regulation? I mean, I don't know. How are we going to be able to do that? How are we going to understand what it is that you're proposing?
You said it's just a dB.
Just a dB.
Yeah. No different than what you have. I mean, there may be something out there that there may be, you know, if we did the research, there may be, you know...
Is it more like...
A typical motor for this purpose generates, you know... this measurement vis-a-vis this approach rather than...
I mean, I think it's something to generate examples. I'm sorry, I was trying to say. For a range of applications.
I just think we need to understand what it is.
How typical, either of you, is... I mean, A, do we know how old that Boston standard ordinance is?
That's current. I don't know when it was actually adopted.
Do you have any sense of how, I mean, you guys are in a lot of places. Do you see this table very often?
No, it's usually dBA.
I guess by my question...
Just straight dBA, not...
Just like the way you have it written.
Does a facility like this, is it more likely to generate some spectrum noise that would be irritating so that we might just regulate these types of facilities with that type of noise?
It depends on the technology. Mm-hmm. Is the... short answer, but so if it's a reciprocating engine, which is very similar to what's in everybody's automobile, I think we're all pretty familiar with, you know, what that sounds like if it's a gas turbine, which is like what the power plant VZ has and probably would be the scale, you know, in the 10 plus megawatt range, is basically a jet engine, and they tend to be a whiny, high frequency, you know, whiny sound. And obviously, those are, well, maybe not obviously, but those are much more objectionable sounds.
My question was, could we say that no such facility shall generate noise in the octaves band center spectrum beyond whatever?
Yeah, specifically to this type of facility.
Or maybe we call Boston and find out how much trouble they have enforcing that.
I heard earlier in the discussion that almost everybody here agreed that 85 decibels is too high, because we're looking at every other town and so on. And I heard someone say 70 during the day, 60 at night. We might recommend, you know, for everybody, you know, changing that now, at least. You know, we could see thing later. You know, I think we ought to let this go, since we're looking at what other states are doing, and they're not in the 85 range.
Yeah, you say it's very typical to be 75 or
70.
Yeah.
I think it's 70.
Yeah.
But you might affect some, I don't know, maybe not, some existing businesses, and that was brought up too.
Yeah. Well, except that John says he's not getting a lot of complaints, so.
Well, if it gets down to 70, then there are going to be complaints all over.
I hear from entertainment.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Right.
And that's about it. I mean, I get calls about construction, and all I got to do is tell them you can't start till 7 o'clock.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't really get that many commercial facilities.
So do we need to mull this over a little bit and maybe do some fact-finding on the enforcement end before making a final decision?
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Put some alternative text in place just to have it.
You can also put in it an either or for this point. Yeah, you could modify this, option A. You can put in the Boston Tables, option B.
Yeah.
For council.
Bring that back.
Or even for this group, or even for the public workshops, so we're looking at these two approaches.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to answer the question or not.
Yeah.
That last document that I shared was, in particular, the last paragraph that speaks to tonal sound. That's the main site law, location law, verbiage. And that basically tells, or at least directs around, you know, balancing the spectrums without actually picking numbers. So you could set a dBA level threshold like you have now, and you could include that language, and if you had a complaint, that would give you a little more leverage for enforcement, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Something to
that
consider.
Might be
like that idea.
I mean, that's already main state law.
So if somebody's complaining about the high screech,
right,
then we could say, look, we've got to test for that.
Right.
And these are the standards that you were that you
like
got.
That idea.
Yeah.
Not going to come up that
often.
I haven't seen noise as an issue even with the combustion or gas turbine sites, because usually it comes in its own enclosure, which is sound attenuated, fire protection, CO2 systems, it has to have that. And that's usually inside another building like this. Mm-hmm. So you'll get complaints about the air handlers, the air fans turning on, the cooling tower. You won't get complaints about the turbine.
Yeah.
Okay. It's 8 o'clock.
What was the resolution on that? Do you want to, rather than propose the Boston chart, you want to simply cross-reference the site location?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
And I think there was an overall consensus to lower the maximum dB and industrial.
Yeah, from 85 to 75.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Look at those numbers, 70.
All right, 70.
Yeah, but then you've got rural residential at 75.
Yeah, lower that one.
Lower that one to 70?
Yeah. The next one down.
Rural residential.
What?
We need it.
We need what?
Charge is changing, we're changing.
Okay, let's move forward. Oh, we should add something about noise testing being performed to assure operational compliance with application.
Before and after.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Establish a baseline.
Yeah.
You get that meeting market right now.
You got that? Got that, Kevin?
Yeah. Charles.
In yellow, consider adding requirement that new power generation other facilities, the noise testing be performed, and Dana's saying before and after.
Yeah.
Establish a baseline.
Can you send him some verbiage?
Sure.
With application plan.
You'll be sure we get to write.
And I would think you'd want to have multiple days, not just a snapshot.
Yeah. It's usually usually make it right, but some type of performance test or testing procedure, it is usually multiple days.